appeared on one paper just appeared last night, and one appeared a few months ago. So the idea is to ask, in the context of trying to build gut models, is what can you do inside of F theory? So here's an outline of what I'll try to cover. First, I'll try to motivate why, in the context of type 2B strings, it's interesting to look in the context of F theory for finding gut models. Then I'll introduce the primary ingredient that we're going to use, which is the exceptional 7 grain. So I'll describe what the low-energy effective theory is for these kind of objects inside of F theory in certain local models. And then I'm going to apply those ingredients to show you how some ingredients of guts can come out from these types of vacua. So then I'm going to wrap up with some conclusions. OK, so basically, the question I'm going to try to address is, how can we embed the standard model or the MSSM inside of string theory? So for the purposes of this talk, I'm going to assume that there's some low-energy supersymmetry, and that this is not an accident, and it's indicating that there's some kind of unification of gauge couplings at some high-energy scale. So basically, mathematically, you can think of, say, taking, say, E6, and then just start chopping off nodes of the Dinkin diagram to go to, say, SO10, SU5, and then the non-abelian piece of, say, the MSSM. So I'm drawing here SO10 and SU5 as really E's, as we'll see that there's something exceptional about using them like this instead of just treating them as classical A and D type algebras. OK, so what's my strategy going to be to look for vacua? So from a top-down perspective, you might say that there's too many choices. You know that we have all these vacua available in string theory, so where should I start looking, or where should we start looking? On the other hand, if you take a bottom-up approach, you might miss some kind of important constraint from the UV physics. So for example, as was emphasized in Cummins' talk yesterday, the matter content available in many of these theories is limited. So it's not like you can just take an arbitrary representation in a low-energy theory and then just hope that it works in the UV. So that's one example of a constraint you'd like to keep from the UV physics. So I'm going to make a couple of simplifying assumptions. Number one, as I've already emphasized, I'm going to assume that there's some kind of supersymmetric gut. And number two, I'm going to assume that there's some kind of decoupling limit which could, in principle, be taken. That doesn't mean that, obviously, in practice, the gut scale and the Planck scale are quite close together. However, this is still a small number. But in principle, I'm going to demand that it is possible to decouple it. So it's in that sense that we're still going to be doing some kind of bottom-up approach to this question. And what we're going to find is that, or what we found was that, in fact, just imposing these two qualitative conditions imposes a lot of restrictions on what's available at the end of the day. OK, so some of this was already reviewed yesterday. So in the context of trying to get a decoupling limit, one natural place to look is, say, dBrains and trying to realize a gauge world volume, use the world volume theory of dBrains to get some kind of decoupling limit. So examples are like brain probes of geometry, that sort of thing. So is this compatible with the idea of making a gut? Well, in the g-string goes to zero limit, we run into problems. For example, one of the interaction terms in the strict g-string goes to zero limit is absent, simply because it requires, say, an epsilon in an SU5 model. Perhaps even more prominent in, say, the SO10 case of an SO10 gut, the spinner representation is absent because it's not a tensor representation. On the other hand, you might say there's no such problem in the heterotic V8 times V8 model. For example, all of your favorite representations for building guts are available from the adjoint of V8. And many of the interaction terms you want, too, are also there. OK, so somehow we would like to combine some aspects of the dBrain with some aspects of the heterotic model. So in some sense, F theory sits right in the middle of these two ideas. So on the one hand, we look at the decoupling limit. The strong coupling limit of, say, type 2D theory can naturally be viewed as being part of what's called F theory. And on the other hand, there's a known duality between certain compactifications of F theory and the heterotic string. OK. So that's kind of the starting point for motivating why we're going to look at, say, F theory. On the other hand, I should point out there's a caveat, which is that the actual vacua that we're going to find, which realize these gut models, do not have a heterotic dual. So I can explain that later. But anyway. OK, so hopefully I've motivated for you a little bit about why I'm going to be interested in looking at F theory. And now I'm going to start introducing the primary ingredient of interest, which is exceptional 7 grain. And then I'm going to study the spectrum and the Yukawa couplings for that setup. So first, let me just review some quick facts about F theory. So it's some 12-dimensional theory where the complex axion dilaton should be viewed as the complex structure modulus of some elliptic curve or some two torus. And in order to get, say, 40 n equals 1 supersymmetry, you take this F theory and you compactify it on an elliptic Calabi-Yau fourfold. So there's some flat space for us, and then there's some 8 real-dimensional manifold left over. So the Calabi-Yau fourfold roughly looks like this. So at various points, we have the complex three-fold phase B3. You have this two torus varying around at various points of the compactification. And then at certain points, it could be that this two torus starts to pinch off in various ways. So I've drawn here just one simple case. And when that happens, this will happen over some complex surface, so some four real-dimensional manifold inside of B3. And locally, what will happen is it will look like some kind of ADE-type singularity. Now, it's known that this type of ADE singularity gives rise to an ADE-type gauge group localized on that world volume. So basically, that's the idea. The interpretation is that we're going to have some seven brain wrapping this complex surface S and filling our spacetime R3, comma 1. OK. So what are more of the ingredients? So OK, remember, I wanted to be able to take a decoupling limit. So I'm going to demand that I have, at first step, have some kind of non-compact Calabi-Yau fourfold. And then, in fact, I'm also going to require that the threefold base is also non-compact. So when we do that, you can also ask, in this local context, what are the types of ingredients which will start to come into play? Well, we'll have our seven brain, where the gut group is going to live. And that could be of SU5, SO10, or naively of all those types. And then we can also have extra matter content occur whenever other seven brains start to hit it. This is very much an analog to, say, in a D-brain setup, where you have a bifunctional extra degrees of freedom localized wherever there's an intersection like this. So for example, in contrast to, say, 2D models, as we reviewed yesterday, you can get extra types of matter content in these kind of models. So for example, you can get the 5-bar and 10 of, say, SU5. You can also get, say, the center of SO10, and also things like 27 of B6. There's another possibility, which is that you could have more than one 7-brain hit each other. And when that happens, just like in D-brains, you expect to get additional contributions to the four-dimensional sequence potential. So all of these ingredients are going to be playing a role in what I have to say. OK, so first of all, before I start looking at, say, the zero-mode content or anything like that, so let me just set notation. S is going to be, for me, some this two-complex dimensional surface. Sigma is going to be a Riemann surface, or a matter curve inside of S. And P is just going to be some point. So in order to study this theory, you can ask, what is the superpotential for the exceptional 7-brain? So you can treat basically all the fields that you have as 8D and 6D fields, basically as 4D n equals 1 superfield, and basically discretize the internal space and just treat it as a 4D n equals 1 problem. So when you do that, the effective superpotential you get looks like this. You have a contribution from the bulk modes, which I've written as this. And that's essentially just a contribution from, say, the bulk gauge field, which looks like a 0-1 form. And then there's another field, 5, which is a 2-0 form. And that basically just controls the position of the 7-brain inside of the threefold phase B3. On top of that, you also have these matter fields, which are charged under the appropriate gauge group of exceptional 7-brain. And those guys transform non-trivially, so they have to interact with the gauge field from the bulk to some kind of covariant derivative. So here I've indicated two different types of interactions. One from the exceptional 7-brain where our gut loads. There's also another one coming from A prime. So this is another brain which is cutting the 7-brain we have. And both of these guys can contribute to the interaction terms for these fields localized on the curve. Finally, the last term, which we've already seen before, is when you have a triple overlap of fields, you can get an additional contribution to the cubic preset superpotential, which is just given by taking three curves, taking the three fields localized on different curves, and just evaluating it at the point of intersection. OK. So how do you get the spectrum and Yukawa coupling from this type of model? So you have the bulk gauge group. And it's very much an analogy to what you would do in a heterotic compactification. You turn on an instanton. That breaks the gauge group to the commutant subgroup. Let's say it takes values in H sub S. And then what you do is expand about this background to get the zero modes of the theory. So the 4D matter just basically reduces to an index problem, where actually you just try to solve the associated Dirac equation for, say, the bulk mode, as well as the field living on the curve. And that typically just reduces, like I said, to an index computation. In fact, you can also do more in these kind of models, which is it's very tractable. And you can typically just actually compute the actual bundle value cohomology groups exactly. You don't even have to worry about an index. But anyway, once you do all of that, you then go back to the superpotential we had on the previous slide, this. And then at leading order, the effective superpotential is given by evaluating at the zero mode. And that's the leading order P. Of course, there are extra contributions you'll get from integrating out Fugger Klein modes. And those look like higher dimension operators in the superpotential. OK, so hopefully I've introduced or I've motivated some of, and told you a little bit about how these exceptional 7-brains look. Now I'm going to start applying some of these ingredients and ask what kind of gut models are possible in this type of setup. So to do that, I'm going to go back to the question we originally had, which was, what are the consequences of having decoupling? So we made this assumption at the beginning that there existed a limit where I could take, say, the gut scale fixed and allow the plane scale to go off to infinity and effectively decouple gravity. What does that buy me, or what kind of vacuum are left over once we do that? Well, what that means is that the surface S wrapped by our 7th ring has to be shrinkable or contractible. And that essentially demands that the first term class has to be positive. And that limits you to essentially 10 different choices, which are called the Delpezzo surfaces. In fact, they're all related by blow-ups. So in fact, there's only really one overarching surface left over, and that's the Delpezzo 8. Now, you might say that this has been too restrictive, because when you look at what's left over in the low energy theory for these models, there's no adjoint valued representations in the zero mode spectrum, and there are no Wilsons. So first of all, the adjoints are typically used in four-dimensional gut models in order to break the gut group down from, say, the gut group down to the MSSM group. On the other hand, this problem also arises in, say, heterotic models. But there you have Wilson lines available to do the gut breaking. Here we have neither option. So it looks like we might have cornered ourselves too quickly. In fact, there is a way to do this, which is to turn on a U1-valued instanton inside of, say, for example, the bulk group SU5. And that can break you directly to the MS standard model gauge group. And in fact, if you make the requirement that when you try to solve the zero mode equations for the bulk system, that there are no exotics, it turns out that there's a unique choice of flux, basically, which does this job. I should also point, as was mentioned in Kerman's talk yesterday, that this precise mechanism is not available precisely in those compactifications of F-theory, which have a heterotic dual. So in that sense, it's relying more heavily on fairly F-theory type compactification. OK, so that's fine if we want to get rid of bulk exotics. So what about the actual matter content of the MSSF? Those all localize on curves in these types of models. And so what happens is that the Higgs fields are those that have some flux through them from the hypercharge, and the matter curves are those that do not. So what happens when we have flux through these is that for an appropriate choice of fluxes, the doublets will remain in the low energy spectrum, but the Higgs triplets will be projected out. Similarly, by having this net flux be zero, the index computation that you can do will always show that you'll have a full number of gut multiplets in the low energy spectrum. OK. So now that I've introduced, say, the Yukawa couplings for this, introduced the spectrum for this theory, I'm now going to talk about Yukawa couplings. And they come in two different types, basically. One is where you have a triple intersection of these curves, all living inside of S. So that means that all three fields are charged under the gauge group of the gut group. They're all charged under the gut group. On the other hand, there's another possibility where only two of them are charged under the gut group. And there's a third guy, which is charged just as a singlet, so he doesn't transform at all. And that means that that matter curve only touches S at a point. So there's some field localized on that curve. It doesn't really live inside of S, just touches it at a point. And in that case, the two curves inside form a vector-like pair. So naively, you would say from effective field theory that they should always just develop a large mass, and that should be the end of the story. What we're going to see is that, in fact, there's something surprising that can happen due to the properties of this wave function, localized, the gauge singlet wave function. OK, so basically what you do for either case is you take the wave function overlaps and sum over all the points where they overlap, and that gives you the contribution to the superpotential. Form the Yukawa coupling. OK, so first, what are the Yukawa couplings inside of S? So let me, for example, just talk about, say, the uptype coupling. So if there were a triple intersection like this, which can easily be arranged in these kind of models, then if there were only one triple intersection, then what would you get? It would look like the outer product of two vectors, and that will have rank one if this is the only overlap. So in that case, you automatically get a hierarchy where you have two very light eigenvalues, and then two zero eigenvalues, and one very large eigenvalue. And of course, you can start to play more games with this and try to make more complicated models of flavor and things like that. But basically, you can start to make more overlaps happen, and then the rank of this matrix can clearly go up. OK, so that's the story for triple overlaps, where they all live inside of S. On the other hand, we could also ask, what happens if they're a vector-like pair? For example, this could be like the Higgs up, the Higgs down, and there could be another guy living in a singlet. So in that case, what happens? Well, now when you try to solve for the wave equation, it's again important that you had a Delpezzo surface. So there's a large positive curvature coming from the Delpezzo surface. So that means that normal to that Delpezzo surface, there's a large negative curvature. So when you solve for the wave equation for this gauge singlet wave function, what you wind up with is either an exponential attraction towards the brain or an exponential repulsion, so away from the brain. So if it's attracted towards the brain, basically it would agree with your intuition that it basically looks as if the matter curve, this guy here, just lives inside of the surface S. And you can basically just treat it as, say, some order one, you'll get some order one Yukawa couples. On the other hand, if it's repelled away from the brain, then what will happen instead is that we'll have some exponential suppression. So here, our perp is just the cutoff scale introduced. Of course, we can't decouple gravity forever. So this is related to that cutoff scale, where we expect to start seeing where the details of the compactification become more important. OK, so this is some suppression which we can get naturally in this kind of setup. So what are the ways that the suppression factor can be used? So for example, if we look at vector-like pairs, they can couple via gauge singlets outside of S. So for example, if we look at the mu problem, we can view this as basically just some superpotential term, which is some cubic term involving a singlet S, some field H up and HD, where H up and HD form a vector-like pair. OK, so now if I look at the overlap wave function for this, it looks exponentially suppressed. So even if the BEV of S is much larger than the weak scale, say the gut scale, we show in the paper that it's possible to, usually just using order one numbers, to wind up with a value for the mu term, which is actually much lower, which is near the weak scale BEV in some cases. So again, this is going kind of counter to what you would expect from a naive effective field theory analysis. But on the other hand, it turned out to be completely consistent because this field S turns out to be charged under another gauge group. So in that sense, it's still consistent. OK. So you can similarly do a similar thing for Dirac neutrinos. So here, there's a coupling of the form H up times a lepton doublet times a right-handed neutrino. And here again, this right-handed neutrino is a singlet. So what that means is that when we look at the wave function overlaps, it can either be attracted or repelled away from the Del Pezzo circuits. So when it's repelled, this coupling here will naturally be quite small. In fact, we show that it can actually be in the right range to give you a reasonable value for the Dirac mass without basically the same in fact, you can relate the value of here to the value of mu that you get, and it turns out to come reasonably correct. Of course, you can also ask, well, what about the seesaw mechanism? I thought that's what guts were good for neutrino sectors. And that can be done too. In that case, you have an attraction mechanism. And then you have to posit that there's some extra interaction term involving just these singlets. And so then you get a Majorana mass term for the right-handed neutrinos that way. OK, so I'm probably going to end a little early, but I'll give you one more slide after this. So hopefully I motivated for you that in the context of looking for gut models in type 2B theory, a natural place to look is F theory 7 brains. And in particular, we saw how to describe the theory associated with those exceptional 7 brains in certain local models, how to extract the spectrum, the Yukawa couplings, and also some of the ingredients involved. In particular, what we saw is that when we imposed this decoupling criterion, we got extra structure in the low energy effective theory. That you naively would have thought you could not get in just, say, a purely bottom-up approach. Indeed, we had to use a couple of ingredients from, say, a top-down approach. Namely, we assumed that there was some kind of F-theory compactification. But it was enough to actually just assume that it was a local model. And that was enough to really put in some strong restrictions on what would come out. OK, so one thing that I did not talk about, which we only discussed briefly in the paper, is how supersymmetry breaking comes about in these kind of models. We described one case of how gauge mediation could be used in this type of setup. But really, there's clearly more to be done here. And then, of course, you might say this is not fully consistent unless I specify a compact Calabi-Yau fourfold. And indeed, that's something that has to be dealt with eventually. Okay, so here let me just conclude just with this slide with an example of how an SU5 gut would look in this, or how this is the actual model that we have in the paper, which is, for example, 3 generations of 10 living on the white curve. 3 generations of 5 bar living on the blue curve. And then you have the Higgs up on the purple curve, the Higgs down on the green curve. And then at the various places where these guys form triple intersections, you get the expected interaction terms in the superpotential. So for example, here you have the 5 times 10 times 10, which, as we mentioned before, is absent in the perturbative model. And you have the expected term 5 bar, 5 bar, 10, which you can get in the 2B setup. And here we've, in this particular scenario, we had both purely Dirac masses for the neutrinos, and as well as the mu term being exponentially suppressed, again via this fact that the gauge singlet wave function could be exponentially damped or could be repelled away from the Del Pezzo surface. OK, so thanks very much.
Is concerning the singlets. So you say some of the singlets, they are outside of S, they could be suppressed.
All the singlets, all the singlets are outside of S.
Yeah, but for if you have, the, for example, an SO10 model, would you like having neutrino standard model singlet, but in SO10, would that live inside S?
Yeah, so we consider models with, okay, so actually, so this is something that I thought I would not have time to cover, but apparently I was way under. But so anyway, so in an SO10 model, it turns out that using this flux to break the gauge group is actually more restricted than you might initially think. So for example, you might say, in SO10, I want to break SO10 to SU5 plus U1, and then SU5 plus U1, S the standard model gauge group times the extra U1 and U1 itself or something. So it turns out that when you try to use this instanton for both factors, you generically wind up with exotic matter representation in the Lorentz spectrum. Just because it's not possible to solve all of the, it's not possible to require all of the indices in the bulk computation to vanish simultaneously. So it becomes an over-constrained problem. So what that means is that the SO10 model has to essentially break to a flipped SU5 model, and then it breaks there. Okay, so to get to your question, in that case, yes, indeed, you did look at models where you have a matter curve inside of the supporting a full spinner of, say, SO10. And then it would proceed basically like the usual model. Then we had a seesaw mechanism in using a higher dimensional operator to generate the appropriate minor mass. But yeah, so I mean this is basically for the SO5.
I have one question. You said somewhere that you can get a number of generations from an index theory. If you put this U1 flux to zero, does this flux change something in this index theory? I just remember the normal type of B situation. When you calculate zero moles, the number of fermions living on four cycles for the question whether you get an instanton contribution or not, that can depend on fluxes. The trivial condition that you have, the normal condition that you have of Euler characteristic -1 on a four cycle, characterizes in the absence of fluxes whether you get the instanton living on the four cycle, like you even be free or not, that has changed if fluxes are there.
Okay, so the fluxes I'm talking about are the the ones for the bulk gauge fields inside the sediment.
Uh-huh.
The fluxes you're talking about, if I understand correctly, are the ones you use to basically freeze the position. So let's say that I had some modeling and I can move the brain around.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could use those fluxes to freeze the position of the brain, and then once you do that, then the zero moles that you want to for this instanton to contribute to the Lorentz theory will be appropriately soaked up, and it could make a contribution to the low energy theory.
Yeah.
Is that basically what you were
saying? Yeah, exactly. One person knows whether this gauge field flux, whether it could change anything in the zero mole counting. So, I mean, in the counting of fermionics zero moles that you would get from the index theory.
No, this flux is precisely what's inside. You're using the index there. So that's
okay.
So basically, it's really, okay, maybe, it's basically just that you have this gauge field, and okay, so there's some flux that localizes on the matter here. And then it's the usual, like, electromagnetism, like, flux in, say, two dimensions, and, you can just, like even the thing, like, they do in, like, Pascal and Schroeder and Nolan Chapman, where it's the same thing. It's not a mysterious, like, F3 black box.
Actually, we're running about 20 minutes over time, so maybe we could pick up questions outside of the session and move on to our last speaker.
Okay.